rusty, run-down pier, a lonely mist has settled here above the shore, like I've seen before. And on cloudy days like this, the ocean feels more limitless and infinite. It feels infinite. So I wave to it. Yes, I wave. The waves are waving back. Who knew waves could wave? Then again, the ocean isn't one to behave. It knows where I've been. I've been dreaming in cerulean and aqua blue. I enjoy the view. Then suddenly the light, the light, the light pours in.
Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am pleased to welcome first-time guest Michael Fink. Hi, Michael.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Michael is here because he has a brand new album out on Center Stage Records called Get What You Want, The Songs of Michael Fink, which is now out on digital and streaming wherever you get your music. I hate to say digital and streaming because I prefer people to get digital rather than streaming, because if you just listen to it on a streaming format, you're not putting a whole lot of pennies in Michael's pocket or in the pocket of Center Stage. But if you do purchase the digital download, then you are putting a lot more pennies and dollars into their pockets, which means that they can produce more albums. So I encourage you to do that. My listeners also, as we will get into the album, they'll get a little bit more better understanding of this. But they also, I hammer into them always that when you are going to sit down and listen to this album or any album, you should always take the time out of your day to sit down and listen to the entire album from beginning to end, because Michael and his team, when they put this album together, they put the album together in a certain order and with a specific goal in mind of kind of taking you on a musical journey. So you kind of listen. It's always good to listen to it from beginning to end, even though you will be hearing songs from the album pulled out of the album throughout the show. I still think it's important to take the time out of your day or evening to kind of sit and listen to an album from beginning to end. And this one is also important to do with that because these are such wonderful songs. So we're going to delve into that. But first, I want you to give the listeners a little background about you, and especially about where your love of musical theater began.
Sure. I was technically born in New York. I grew up in sunny South Florida in a magical land called Boca Raton. Mm-hmm. And I happened to have a couple of parents that loved musical theater. In fact, on my parents' honeymoon, they took a trip to New York City and saw the original cast of A Chorus Line. And they love musicals. We lived in New York when I was a baby. And then when they had to move for work, they were devastated by it. So they still devastated by the fact that Broadway shows and musicals weren't as accessible to them as they have been living in the city. So even growing up in Florida, we would take these annual or every other year, take a trip to the city and, you know, do a bunch of touristy stuff. But seeing Broadway shows, seeing musicals was always a goal. In fact, this makes me feel older than I realized, but like we would get out the newspaper and the New York Times listings of all the shows. Mm-hmm. We would each initial which show we wanted to see, and whichever got the most initials were the shows we would see. So they kind of helped instill that love of musical theater for me. And as a kid, trying to find interest outside of doing schoolwork, you know, they signed me up for soccer camp, computer camp, and when they found a theater camp, and that was it. That was it. It was, I did a theater camp when I was 9, and that was part of a children's community theater. And that set me on a course to have an outlet to do theater. That outlet continued into high school, doing high school theater. And then the quick version of how that translated into musical theater writing was in high school, I did this program called Lovell Institute, which is a rather rigorous program where professional artists collaborate with high school students to conceive, write, compose an entire full-length musical from scratch in 3 weeks and do a full production of it, all in that 3 weeks.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah. Memorized, full set, band, everything. And that introduced the idea that, hey, anyone can write a musical. I can write a musical. You can write a musical.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved to New York to go to NYU to be an actor. And while I was living here, I learned a couple things. One, the audition lifestyle was not for me. I salute every actor friend I have because that is grueling, truly, truly just tough. And the other thing I learned was I liked writing them more than I liked being in them. And I discovered this wonderful community of musical theater writers here in the city who were putting up their work in one way or another, whether it was finding a few friends and a piano and just learning the score or getting a room to make the show come to life. And I discovered while I was in college at NYU that I can make the musicals myself or with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of the abridged version of the love of musical theater turned into musical theater writer.
Well, I'm going to make you backtrack a little bit.
Only because
I'm curious as to, there has to be a certain point in your life where you grow up loving musicals. I think that, I mean, I know that you went at a very young age to your first musical, which was Phantom? Was
that Phantom? I was 3 years old.
3 years old, right. I know I read that somewhere. I heard you say that somewhere in an interview. But at some point, you had to have said, I know that going to this program where you were writing a musical in 3 weeks, but you had to have at some point in your life said, I want to write, I'm curious about writing a musical. You can't just automatically go into this program. You had to have some sort of thought of, I can do that, or I want to try and do that. Was there a seed planted somewhere along the line that said to you, I really want to try and write something?
It was a few things. So that program I mentioned, I did not think I was going to enjoy it. In fact, the artistic director of the company had to really coax me to do it. Said, I think this would be a good fit for you. And I will never forget one day where the music director, my dear friend Ryan McCall, said, okay, we have to write this next song. You three, you're going to go into a room. Michael, you can sit at the piano. You'll write it. I'll be in this other room writing a different song with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of thrown to the wolves a little bit, and it was a little scary. But that was a really powerful learning experience. But I think another pivotal moment was my first year here in the city when I discovered NYMPH, the New York Musical Theater Festival. This is, you know, kind of back in the day. And the first NYMPH show I ever saw was this gorgeous three-person musical called The Boy in the Bathroom. And it was written by Michael Lubris. And it starred Mary Stout.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. This show was stunning. I want to say, I could be wrong about this, but I want to say, like, even Disney Theatricals got interested in this show. It was such a stunner of a musical, but it was really just this tiny, tiny closet of a set and these three actors and a piano performing in an off-Broadway theater, later picked up by all these people. And it really introduced that door of possibility and what people can make and what people can do. And my freshman year of college, I made this very bold decision. I didn't appreciate how bold it was, but I went to Tisch to be an actor. And I thought, if I really want to write musicals, which I was discovering more and more was something I wanted to do, I did two things that first year of college. I said, I'm going to finish writing a full-length musical from scratch this year, my freshman year, which I did. Wild, confusing show that made no sense. It was 3 hours long, but hey, it was the first one. And and I also chose to leave Tisch to go to the music school, which was kind of a bold thing when you spend so many years. I mean, obviously, when you're very young when you're 19, but still, when you're 19 and you have this perception of who you are and what you do and what you should do, that's a big, bold step. And that was sort of a pivotal choice to switch to the music school. The epilogue to that is I wasn't a fan of the music school. I jived more with the theater people. And Tisch was like, well, we'll do your shows. So I ended up going back. I switched schools twice in college within NYU. But you're right. It took time to develop this love of writing these shows. But it was a lot of contributing factors, a lot of inspiring works of art, inspiring people. And again, that idea that anyone can write a musical, just find the way to make it happen. And I think that that was more inspiring than anything.
Right. And who were your, I hate to use the word icons, but who were your, in the world of musical theater, who kind of inspired you in terms of the shows you like? Did you have favorites? Did you have specific writers that you really latched onto that you were like, I mean, not that, I don't want to say that you copied or, but sort of emulated or inspired you to kind of want to write like that or pursue those sorts of topics or themes? I mean, were there ones that really attracted you?
I've been inspired by so many writers. I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but it's true. I don't remember having one person that I loved. There were a lot of shows I loved. You know, I'm a peak millennial, so Rent was a thing I played every day for about a year, you know. Into the Woods, that PBS recording was huge for me. Like you said, I saw Phantom of the Opera when I was 3 years old in the front row, which, you know, great parenting choice, but also, yeah, thank goodness. I have to say that there was one recording that kind of, I think, encapsulates all of it, or one show, I should say. When I was in high school, I fell in love with driving to Borders or Barnes & Noble, going to the soundtrack section, and in the back of the soundtracks were the cast recordings. Mm-hmm. Finding these CDs of these little shows I had never heard of before. That's how I discovered Songs from an Unmade Bed and Thrill Me and I Love You Because. But then I got my hands on Bill Finn's Elegies. Mm-hmm. That one rocked my world. I put it on in my car and I was just listening to usually either all five actors at a time or one actor at a time and a piano. That was it. Mm-hmm. That was it. And it was this wonderful, quirky, heartbreaking, hilarious, beautiful recording of all these songs and stories that sort of encapsulated this idea that you don't need $1 million to do a musical. You can write about weird things and weird people, and it can still be touching and informative and healing. And I just appreciated so much of how Bill Finn was never afraid of writing something melodically bizarre, writing something lyrically, maybe what some might say is wrong, but to him, it was how he wanted to express himself. And so then getting my hands on A New Brain and Falsettos and all that, I can say that, the way Bill Finn looked at musicals was a way I wanted to look at musicals.
Right.
In that they can be about anything as long as you connect with it, and they can sound like anything as long as it's how you want it to sound.
Right. I think that makes sense, because Finn is probably why he always stood out was that he was such a unique voice in the world of musical theater. He always had a unique perspective. And a very individual approach to musical theater. And I can totally see, and I can see that in your songs. You can see that in your writing. I mean, you kind of have a similar approach in the sense that your songs, especially the songs on this album that we're going to get to, are very character-driven, story-driven. They have a lot of art and humor and hope. And it was funny because when I was listening to it, it actually did, because I hear a lot of these kinds of albums from young songwriters and stuff, and you always hear traces of Sondheim. You always hear traces of, you can see where they're kind of pieces of their things that have inspired them or things that they have kind of learned. And you can always hear, oh, they're kind of emulating Sondheim in this, or they're kind of pulling Sondheim. But when I listened to yours, I went, this is sort of reminding me a little bit of William Finn. This is sort of the unique perspective of character-driven songs that have wonderful melody, unique melodies, unique stories they're telling, they're quirky, but they're also very warm and they really embrace you and they really pull you in. And that's what I got from the album. And it reminded me of Finn. It really did. So I was kind of, gosh. So I'm glad. So it was interesting when you brought that up, because I wasn't sure if you were going to go down that road.
But no, I'm thrilled. You just said that. No, that means a lot. I appreciate it.
It really did. And so that kind of brings me to the next question I wanted to ask you, which is what stimulates you to write in terms of what kinds of stories, what kind of characters, what kinds of themes really drive you?
The first thing that comes to mind when asked that question is writing musicals is hard. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of work. And a rule that I've sort of unofficially, very organically given myself that if something sits with you for a while, it means it's worth taking the time to actually write a score and write a script or either or both. I've noticed that a lot of the musicals, book musicals I've written are driven by real life stories or real life events that I can't believe I didn't know about beforehand and that I can't believe are more commonly known.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this musical theater brain wonders what would that look and sound like on stage. You know, so for example, in college, I wrote a musical called Reporting Live, which is a true story of a reporter from the 70s named Christine Chubbuck, who sadly took her own life on the air on TV. And not many people knew about Christine's story. I didn't know about it. And then I turned her story into a musical, this weird, fantastical, but also biographical show. And I remember after the show, someone came up to me from a rather prestigious institution and basically hinted at this isn't the right idea for a musical. And it was funny to me because it never occurred to me whether it was the right idea for a musical. It just, that's how I saw it. And I think a lot of the shows I've written and songs fall into that category of this story sounds too insane to be true, yet it is. What does it sound like? I'm curious to know. There's sort of this rule they have at Pixar where it's they want to make the movies that they want to see themselves that they haven't seen. And that idea makes so much sense to me and I connect mm-hmm. to it. And that if it's something I feel like I've seen before or heard before, I'm not very interested in creating it myself because someone else has done that. And there's nothing wrong with committing to a style or a genre or a pastiche or anything like that. That's awesome. But I don't have the imagination to reinvent that wheel. I'm more curious in building a new wheel from scratch, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. And I don't know. If somebody had said that to me, I my initial response is, I don't think there is such a thing as a wrong subject for a musical. If it's done correctly and done thoughtfully and done with the right approach, almost anything could potentially be the subject matter for a musical.
That's what I think.
If it's done, I mean, because you can say that about a lot of the most successful musicals ever that mm-hmm. On paper, you might look at them and say, oh God, that would never make a good musical. And some of the best ones you could say that about just because that's what makes them so interesting is that someone has taken an idea or a subject matter that you would think would never work. But because of the ingenuity and expertise and skills of the creative team, they make it work. And that's what makes it attractive and speak to an audience is that you are able to make that kind of subject matter work in the musical format, right?
Absolutely. I think everything is on the table when it comes to adapting, writing, you know, an original story, whatever it mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. for a musical. There's no wrong way about it. I remember... I forget what show it was, but the show closed early, but the author said, oh, these characters just didn't sing. And I said, that's not true. They did sing. You wrote songs for them. They sang. Mm-hmm. It just happened to not run very long. And that sucks, but it doesn't mean it was any less valid for you to write that show. Anything can be a musical. I know I sound like the cook from Ratatouille, but, you know, who says anyone can cook? Anything can be a musical, you know?
Mm-hmm. I firmly believe that. And you are incredibly prolific and seem to be very, very busy. You've written the musical. Yeah, and you write not only music and lyrics, but you also write book, which is a huge load. That's a heavy lift. That just is such a heavy lift. And you're also involved, because I also noticed you're involved with something called Theater Now Musical Theater Writers Lab.
Yes.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that? Before we jump into the album, I want to kind of cover some of this ground.
Sure. Yes, I am part of the Theater Now New York Writers Lab. It is a wonderful group of writers that meets every couple weeks or twice a month, usually. It's a team of 10 writers, and each week, three teams of writers have 45 minutes to share whatever they're working on. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is they're working on, there's no, it's your time to use it, and you have a room of writers to work with. Theater Now is a nonprofit arts, theater organization based here in New York City. Mm-hmm. They have been so helpful, and they've become a bit of an artistic home. I discovered them about 7 years ago. They do a festival of 10-minute musicals called Soundbites, and they did one of my shows, which is called Dead Flowers, sort of inspired by a true story of an elderly woman who discovers her best friend is in bed with her husband. It's, you know, elderly, three elderly characters. And so she ends up taking out her anger at a gay dive bar where she meets a young drag queen who inspires her to get revenge on the husband. Mm-hmm. And it's a 10-minute musical. And then the year after, 2 years after they did that in the festival, they were starting this writer's lab. And it's an organization that's just about lifting up writers. And they truly do. They, you know, when I say, hey, I just want to do a reading of the show, they say, cool, here's what we can give. We can give space. We can do this. We can't do that. You know, work with us. And that's what's so great about them. But we have so many great teams of writers and folks in that room. And I've been a part of it now for 5 years, 6 years. And it has shaped everything I've written in the past 5 years quite a bit.
That's terrific. And is there a website that people can find out more about it? Or is it, I'm trying to figure out if it's someplace that people can visit and find out more information about it, since it's a nonprofit.
Yes. They're called Theater Now, but they also go by Theater Now New York. And so you can find out information at tnny.org. And yeah, they do all sorts of developmental work, readings, sometimes developmental full productions, which I got to do one a couple years ago at ART New York in on 10th and 53rd, which was great. They did a 3-week run of one of my shows, and it was huge in the development of that show, which was great.
Oh, great. Well, I will include a link to the site on the radio show page so people can find it. So let's jump to what we're really here to talk about, which is your album.
Yeah.
Which is out on Center Stage Records, called Get What You Want. Now, my understanding is that our friend, Robbie Rozelle, who's a delightful, wonderful guy who is a major force in the world of musical theater albums in New York, has been pestering you about putting together an album for a while. This started pre-pandemic, right? Where you guys were he was kind of urging you to put together an album of songs from your existing musicals at the time. And it was sort of I think you guys did a crowdsourcing campaign to pay for it. And the concept was to pull, like I said, to pull songs from your existing shows and put them together on a compilation album. But first off, it kind of got stalled with the pandemic, like a lot of projects did. But instead of pulling songs from your existing shows, you sat down and wrote a whole album of new songs for this. Is that right?
Mostly, yeah. I would say roughly half the songs on the album were written for the album.
Okay.
But yes, we were trying to pull songs from these shows, and I sort of put the theater part of musical theater first, so it's hard for me to pull songs out of context without wanting people to understand who these people were in relationship to before and after the song happens in these shows. So rather than going down the route of pulling songs from these musicals, I do have a handful of standalone trunk songs, and we weren't just going to put all the ones I had written onto one album. We wanted to make sure, how you so eloquently described in the beginning, it is one experience from start to finish,
right,
that has not necessarily a linear narrative, but sort of a thematic arc in a way. So we pulled songs that seemed to make sense together in one world, in one capacity. And then it was about filling in the missing pieces and, you know, filling in the gaps and writing a bunch of new songs that would be written for this.
Got it. Okay. So talk about, in more specifics, about this whole process of putting this together once it was a go, and you were going to actually do this album, because you were working with not only with Robbie, but you're working with an arranger, orchestrator to do this. You've got, from what I read on the liner notes, 20 vocalists working on this album, and you've got musicians in different countries working on this album. You've got, I mean, this is as I know, because I've worked on albums, and I know I've had a lot of people on the show who've worked on albums. The logistics of these kinds of things are a little crazy sometimes.
Yeah.
Because you are recording with a lot of people. There's a lot of moving pieces. And you are the main songwriter on all these. So talk about the process of putting this together.
Yeah, it started with the Kickstarter campaign. And yes, Robbie, who specializes in cast recordings and musical theater albums, saying, let's collaborate on an album. So we launched a Kickstarter campaign in mid-late 2019. We got it funded. We hit the ground running. I was working with a very dear friend of mine, Nils Petter Ankerblom, who is an arranger, orchestrator, conductor, music director, composer himself. You might be able to tell, he's from Sweden. Mm-hmm. And he is a genius orchestrator. His resume, I could go off on all the artists he's worked with, but let me just tell you, many people perform at the Grammys have had arrangements by him. And so I was very lucky that he said he would work with me on this album. And he orchestrated a bunch of these songs. We recorded most of the songs of the musicians, I mean, in February 2020.
The
end of February, like right at the cutoff when the world shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. The world shut down. And we had to make a choice if we were going to do this. I hate the phrase COVID style, or I don't know the sensitive way of saying it, but...
Well, remotely.
Remotely. There we go. We're like recording in isolation, because I know some people were sending out like mic packs to actors for their demos and recordings. And we didn't want to do that because we wanted to be able to collaborate with the actors and be in a room together. So we made the choice to put this on hold for a little bit. But once it became safe to gather in tight spaces against like a recording studio, we got back to work, and it took some time to get those gears really rolling, but it was like a beautiful snowball going down a hill. The further it went along, the faster it went along. And we started recording a vocalist here and there. As you just said, it's a huge logistical puzzle getting all these singers in for all these songs. I think, I counted. We had 20 vocalists and 18 musicians across the whole album.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to, it's out now, and there it is. That's I think I skipped a part of the process, but the rest of the process was sort of what you expect. We would get actors one at a time to record these songs.
And how did you pick people? I'm just curious. How did you pick your vocalists?
We sort of cast it like a musical. Each song has a very specific character in mind.
Yes.
For, if this character were to exist in a larger book musical, who would you want to play that role? Mm-hmm. You can't just get anybody to sing these songs. You want to make sure it fits. You want to be able to see the character when you hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And listeners are smart, and audiences are smart, and they can pick up on that. When I asked a friend who was 23 to record a demo for a character of a mom who is in her 50s, people can tell. So we cast it as if it was a musical, and I asked friends of mine, Robbie asked friends of his, and we reached out to a few folks that some of us kind of knew in the periphery, but we thought, man, we think they'd be really good for this song or for this moment.
There's nothing beautiful about getting up to start again. There's nothing noble about knowing when you're wrong. There's nothing beautiful about realizing where and when I needed some redemption all along. And so I packed my bags to see the earth in worn out shoes. I took a step outside and saw the blazing sun. I started walking on a trail with nothing left to lose. And now I'm part of nature, and standing on a mountain, and paying for the awful things I've done. I wish I could tell you how I got here. I wish I could tell you why I'm here. But I'm out on my own, without forgetting what I've done and what I've left behind. I'm walking on. alone and searching for an answer that I doubt I'll ever find. So give me time and let me be free. But when I come home, will you still be there for me? The air is filled with pine and wildlife is all around. The trees are getting taller everywhere I roam. My feet are swollen and my hands are rough as solid ground. I'm scared of what's expected and I'm scared of going further. Most of all, I'm scared of going home. I wish I could tell you how I got here. I wish I could tell you why I'm here. But I'm out on my own, without forgetting what I've done and what I've left behind. I'm walking alone and searching for an answer that I doubt I'll ever find. So give me time and let me be free. When I come home, will you still be there for me? I've been waiting for a feeling, for I say I've learned a lesson. How the trail has taught me not to give a damn. No, 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 but instead I'm now embracing the mistakes I'm finally facing and how these moments made me who I am. I wish I could tell you how I got here. I wish I could tell you why I'm here, but I'm here, and I'm out on my own, without forgetting who I was and who I left behind. I'm walking alone and searching for an answer that I doubt I'll ever find. Time and let me be free. But when I come home, I'll need you there for me. I'll need you there for me.
All the songs came together in different ways. In a really cool fashion, you know. I mean, for example, there's the song "Walking Alone" that the incredible Alan H. Green recorded, and that song was written for Alan H. Green years prior. So that's easy. Let's call Alan up, get him in the studio. This is for his voice. Let's do it. And then there's some songs like the fabulous Miss Lila Murray, where you need to have someone who's willing to go a little crazy. Mm-hmm. And have a lot of fun and also fit the bill of what that story tells. And someone like Donna Lynn Champlin was felt like she was made for it, you know? And mm-hmm. so that's how that cast, for lack of a better term, came to be.
Right. And one of the nice things I liked about it is oftentimes, and I'm not disparaging other albums of this ilk, but there are other times where you look at these compilation albums of collections from a songwriter, and they're filled with a lot of the same recognizable Broadway names and, you know, a lot of the same people over and over again, a lot of recognizable names. And I loved the fact that when I got yours, I recognized some of the names, but I didn't recognize everybody. And there were quite a few singers and vocalists on here that I did not know. And I like that because then I'm discovering new people that I've never heard before. I mean, they may have appeared on some of the other albums as sort of like backup vocalists or background vocalists for some other singers, but here they're giving solos and they're singing the songs. And I had never heard some of these people before. And I would listen and then I'd go, who is this? Who is this? What's this person's name? And I really wanted to find out who they were because they were fantastic vocalists. And I really like that you guys did that. And I know that's you, and I also know that's Robbie, giving, you know, a chance for kind of some of these lesser known people to step up and get a moment to shine.
Yeah, I mean, that's what happens, I think, when it's song forward.
Yeah.
You know, it's nice to have someone who is as well known as Kate Rockwell on an album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also nice when that person fits the song so perfectly, and the way she connected with that song in such a powerful way was incredible. But then it's really nice having folks like Tommy Kaiser, who is very popular online. I'm not a TikTok person, so I didn't know this, but the theater industry has a different relationship with who he is as an artist than online fandom. And I never met him before until the day we recorded. We got into the studio together. And I've told this story now so many times, but it's truly one I will never, ever forget. But when he started recording the song, it really felt like it was written for him to do. And it was rather magical. And this is someone who people are going to look up and say, who is this guy if they don't know him already?
I have this friend from many years ago. It's been a while since I've seen her. She's someone you don't know. But like little kids who find older kids that they someday want to be, the little kid that looked up to her was me. Angie Davis, my best friend, we grew up together way back when, despite the fact she was several grades ahead. To me, everything she did was cool, like how every Friday after school she would ditch her friends and drive me home instead. And she'd love to show me her favorite movies, like The Princess Bride and The Karate Kid. I tried to emulate who she was in everything she did, and time went on. Time went on. Angie Davis, former hero, made me thankful I was here. So when she left for college, I was lost. She would visit and I would write, and things seemed like they'd be alright. And the distance was another bridge we crossed. And I got to visit her college campus. Proudly showed me off to all her friends, and I never guessed that would be where the story ends. But time went on, time went on. And growing up is always strange, but what grow. They get married, they have kids, and they try to not let go. People learn, people try to find what they most believe in. So did Angie, so did I. How I want those times again, but she found God and I found men, and apparently the two can't coexist. I told the truth and felt relieved, but when I learned what she believed, I realized there's something that I missed. For years I tried to find a moral compromise. For years I tried to give ourselves a shot. But every time I'd see her, I'd be someone that I'm not. So I moved on, I moved on. And the hero's gone. The hero's gone. And I moved on.
I'm glad you said that and appreciate that, because that's something that I know a lot of fellow writers who do this, and I agree, I don't want to disparage them, but the name of the game is to stack the album with as many big names as possible for all the understandable reasons. And those big names are awesome, but it doesn't change the fact that some of the lesser known folks out there are just as capable, if not even more capable, depending on what that song is or what that character is, which was a neat experience having this very eclectic group of people record these songs.
Oh yeah. And you still have several, very well-known people on this album, which is perfectly fine, especially because they're perfectly cast for the songs they're singing. And it's justified for what you're asking them to do. But again, I'm of the camp that I want to discover new people and I want to hear new people, and I'm buying it. I'm purchasing the album because I want to hear your songs and I want to hear new people singing them. And I like that. So when people listen to the album from beginning to end, what are you hoping that the listeners are going to get from the kind of musical journey they go on with you? What's the message? What is the theme? I know my experience was that I'm listening to a lot of really interesting character studies. I'm listening to a lot of interesting stories. I'm hearing a lot of, as I said earlier, I'm hearing a lot of humor, but I'm also hearing a lot of hope. I'm hearing a lot of heart. I'm hearing a lot of depth to these songs. And I also have to tell people, on average, because when you, I'm sure you know this, when you see these albums, most of the songs are, 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes. And I look, when I had this on my computer as I played it, I'm like, oh my goodness, most of these songs are 4 minutes or 4.5 minutes or 5 minutes. I'm like, these are long, but it's justified because you are a storyteller and the songs justify the length and they don't feel long, which is right there is a huge accomplishment, because sometimes when you hear these songs, you're like, okay, this song's too long. It's going on forever. And it doesn't feel that way. So talk about what the journey is that the album gives.
I think the journey, the orchestrator of Nipe, Nils Petter Ankerblom, he goes by Nipe, he would joke with me going, oh, great, you said you wrote another new song for the album. It's 160 bars. So I was like, I'm so sorry, but it moves. I promise it moves. And then, of course, the way he orchestrates it, it really does move. I would say that the journey of the album is to understand that the choices we make in life and the risks we take are not always glamorous.
Mm-hmm.
They're not always profound. They are not always beautiful, and they're not always fulfilling, but that's part of what it means to fight for what it is we dream of and what it is we aspire to be and what it is we aspire to do. You know, I think it's very intentional that songs like Running Out of Time and Milo at the Office and Sorry for That are towards the beginning of the album, even though some of those have funnier moments, some of them have more heartbreaking moments. But by the end of the overall experience, it's that those choices, those risks we take, they are worth it.
It was a cold and snowy night in mid-December. You were sitting at the bar with all these other guys you knew. I was at the other end, right by the window. Still, you noticed me, and then I noticed you. I said, holy shit, when I saw you walk over. But we introduced ourselves and then we talked till the final call. We learned a New York lawyer and a waitress from Ohio could find some things in common after all. And when you smiled, I knew you were a someone that could make me proud. And all the while, I knew you were my someone. I that and was embarrassed by that, and I didn't know why. You said don't worry and then asked if we could meet again, and I knew I was right. Then you kissed me goodnight, and that night was just the dawn of an adventure. From a little date at Starbucks to a villa by the sea, and for a year I've been so proud to be beside you. Now I second guess if you're as proud of me, because lately I have noticed you're unhappy, and whenever I suspect this I think, what did I do now? And since my heart is full when you are happy, I try to change the worst of me somehow. 'Cause I know I sometimes make excuses for the times I make us late, and I know every day I try to be better than that. I've tried to be better than that. Now I'm wondering why. Every day I'm waking up to make you happy, and this need to make you gratified consumes my every thought. I don't know if I'm this way because I love you, or if it's because of something I was taught. And so I'm letting you go, and I thought you should know that if I wanna grow, I should do it alone. Maybe one day you'll see a new version of me that can fly.
I personally struggle with some of the bigger choices we have to make in life. I joke I have commitment issues, even though I've been with this my husband now for about 14 years.
Should you be saying this on a radio show? Make sure your husband doesn't listen to this if it's a problem.
I think it's okay. He knows this. Okay. Because the idea of tattoos freak me out. That seems so permanent. What if you make the wrong choice? You know, little choices like super salad at a restaurant freaks me out. Like, oh, I don't know. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I have a confession to make. I just got my first tattoo.
Oh my gosh,
and
amazing.
I'm substantially older than you. I've always had the same issue you've had. I don't want to get a tattoo, and I finally got one.
That's awesome. So, I'm thinking about getting one too. Don't tell anyone. I know that's something I regret saying on a radio show, is that I'm considering getting a tattoo. But I told this to my husband, and he was like, "Really? Like you?" I was like, "I don't know. I feel a little motivated," but that's the idea. Oh, that looks great.
It's a band of fish that goes around my ankle. Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Because I'm a scuba diver. So it's, and you can't really see it unless I'm wearing like shorts or whatever. So
that's amazing. That looks beautiful. That's great.
Thank you.
Who knows what I'll do? Every time I think of one, I go, no, that's not right. And bringing it back to the album, it's that idea is that sometimes the choices we make to move forward, to feel fulfilled, are not so simple and not so easy. You know, a song like Sorry for That, where it seems like this character has everything she could hope for, but there's still something else that's missing. Mm-hmm. And maybe in order to have that, it requires blowing it all up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or the first lyric in Walking Alone is, there's nothing beautiful about getting up to start again, which I know is quite a bold absolute. But the point of that lyric, and especially in the context of that lyric, is that it's not glamorous getting up off after falling down on your face. Usually you have mud on you. Usually you scrape your knees. Usually you're in pain. Mm-hmm. It's not this, there's no John Williams fanfare behind you, lifting you up triumphantly with the horn section. It's a little, there's some rough edges. But then by the end, with those final three and a half songs, saying it's worth it. It's saying that you don't know what the future has. You don't know what tomorrow looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And that fact is on your side as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Exactly.
And I think that's the journey of these songs, as well as to laugh, as well as to be moved, as well as to be, you know, dazzled by what these vocalists can do. It's to understand that in order to feel fulfilled, you have to make a choice to find that fulfillment. And that choice can be scary, and it can be, again, not the most glamorous one, but it might be the right one.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, there are not really wrong choices in life. There may be, it may be, if there's two choices, there one may be one that's not as good as the other one.
Yeah.
But you don't know till you do it. And no choice is so bad that you can't fix it mm-hmm. later, you know, and you only get one shot.
Yeah.
At life. So yeah. You've got to take some risks once in a while, and you have to take chances and, you know, take a shot at things. And if it doesn't work, you try again and do something different. And you can't live with regrets, and you have mm-hmm. to keep moving forward. And that's the way life is. You only get one shot at this. So
exactly. That's why I'm kind of inspired by, you know, so the fabulous Miss Lila Murray is obvious to most that it is based on Anna Delvey, although it was written before the show, the Netflix show. I think it was Netflix. And she said in the courtroom, "I have no regrets about anything I did." I'm butchering the quote, but basically I took a lot of big swings and I don't feel bad about it. And I thought, what does that feel like? I want to know, you know, or like the crazy kid in Me and My Cartoon Friends, which is based on a true story. A kid actually did that to someone. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah, maybe you almost murdered somebody, but you were fighting hard for that little piece of joy you wanted, you know? I mean, don't kill anybody.
As long as you're not hurting other people.
People. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly.
Saturday morning, I wake up excited to watch cartoons. And I know that nothing will get in my way. I had spent the entire week trying to end my unlucky streak of having my parents ruin this special day. Usually there's interruptions, like dad being loud on the phone, or mom having 9 a.m. drink time, and they won't leave an 8-year-old all alone. But I had some plans, as weird as they were. I started with mom and was super nice to her. And I said, I love the gray hairs growing on your chin, and how you don't care about your saggy skin. You're taking a stand against all of your friends and what they'll think or say. Then she scheduled a beauty appointment that would last all day. Now she is at the salon and I'm happy. Finally mommy is gone and I'm happy. And now that the TV is on, I'm so happy. My happiness depends on me and my cartoon friends. And on this morning I woke up excited to watch cartoons, 'cause I know that nothing would get in my way. Dad likes to work in our high-rise building, doing his fancy business deal thing. But I knew how to make him leave and let me stay. So I said, "Daddy, we got some funny voicemail from a stewardess named Tamara. She said she had some fancy lawyer and her hidden camera. She wants to meet you just to see you or beat you on Saturday at 10. Thank God I read my daddy's emails, or I would be screwed again. And now I can watch my TV. I'm so happy. My parents are not here with me. I'm so happy. They might get divorced, but we'll see. I'm still happy, 'cause happiness depends on me and my cartoon friends. Never let anyone get in the way of exactly what you want. That's what I learned from Mom and Daddy. All I want is a remote control, fun pajamas and cereal, chocolate milk in a Star Wars cup, and private time with the volume up. This morning I woke up excited to watch cartoons, and I said that nothing will get in my way, including a suspended construction guy out on display. I'm on the 9th floor where the air is thin, so how is there construction right outside my window? I opened my window and told the guy to cut it out. On drilling this window he's installing. Then I saw the cable that kept the guy from falling. I went to my kitchen and I grabbed a knife. Then I started cutting. He held on for life, dangling in the air, and then he stopped drilling. And now I can watch some TV, and it's awesome. I hear the guy calling for me, and that's awesome. I think that he's starting to pee. Well, that's awesome. You know the guy could have stopped. Now I have pulled all the stops, whoa. And now I can see all the cops, oh, no, no, no. If they interrupt me, he drops. When the school week ends, no one comprehends much a kid depends on all of his cartoon friends. Me and my cartoon friends.
So what is next for you? I mean, the album has just come out. There's the response, I hope, is very positive. We should also note that you yourself perform on the album. So you're performing days are not behind you entirely, even though
not
you're
entirely
devoted mostly to writing. You are still performing a little bit. So what's next?
There's a bunch of projects happening right now. There's a musical that I'm working on with composer Andrew David Sotomayor, who it's called 161st Street. It's the true story of Ray Negron and the New York Yankees. If you don't know much about him, look him up. It's a fascinating story. That's been in development for a bit. There's a one-act musical comedy. I got to get really silly last year. I wrote a one-act comedy that's kind of geared for high schoolers, and a high school actually tried it out last year in Birmingham, Alabama, which was a really fun place to go and experiment a new musical comedy. And that's getting picked up for licensing soon. That show is called Movies Are Not Dead. There is a two-man gay erotic thriller that doesn't have a title yet. It's called The Untitled Kansas Project. Very, very loosely inspired by the Ted Haggard scandal. And that had its first reading in May, and it's going to have another one in October. And that's been fascinating, writing a two-person musical. Mm-hmm. As well as some other projects that either feels so up in the air or so early stage that it feels weird to talk about on a radio show. Yes. But all sorts of projects, a docu-musical that's in the works, another potential song cycle with another collaborator of mine. Just lots of shows, too many shows.
As I said before, you are very prolific. You are a very busy person, but I am thrilled that you took some time today to chat. Ew. On the show. I encourage people, I highly recommend Get What You Want, The Songs of Michael Finck on Center Stage Records. It's a wonderful listen with a wonderful lineup of vocalists doing incredible work with your songs because they've got great material to work with. And it's a great, like I said, listen to it from beginning to end. You will not be disappointed. Purchase the digital download. I know people are going to go and sample the streaming. They're going to go, oh, here's a track with Donald and Champlin, and here's a track with, you know, Jelani Remy, and here's a track with this person, and I know those names. But I understand that people will do that. But trust me, you want to sit down and listen from beginning to end. Where online can people find you? Where should we send people to find you? Do you have a website?
I do have a website. It's michaelfinckmusic.com. Mm-hmm. Fink with an E. You can also find me on social media, primarily on Facebook and Instagram. On Instagram, at MC Fink. I know that sounds like MC Hammer, and it's more like or like a Happy Meal, like a McFink. But yeah, you can find me on my website at michaelfinckmusic.com.
Terrific. And they should. So we will include that link on the website also, as well as a link to Center Stage Records so they can find your album and purchase an MP3 download of the entire album to listen to. Thank you again, Michael. It's been an absolute delight chatting with you.
Thank you. Same here. This was so much fun. And thank you for the kind words about the album. I really appreciate it.
You are very, very welcome.
Always out of breath and always on my way. Stuck in traffic, stuck in limbo, racing to save the day. From the morning rush till the sun goes down, I was in motion toward a finish line that never came around. So every night I'd ask myself, did I do enough today? A favor or an offer or a way of letting go. So despite the angel, I stayed as kind could be. Running errands, running rampant for everyone but me. Still every night I'd lie awake asking, did I do enough? I don't know how, but tell me now, is this enough? Till last night. when the angel came. She looked upset and said that I'm not fighting for what I'm longing for. She said, I'm running out of time. 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 Did I do enough today? Did I do enough today? Did I do enough today?